Hello and welcome to Russians with Attitude. In this episode, we are going to pontificate on the many possible scenarios for Ukrainian statehood after the war is finished. But first, let's look at this footage from a Russian military helicopter that was recorded in the first days of the war near Hostomel airport. Incredible video, right? Get prepared for more quality footage like this to come out relatively soon. Let's hope we leave all those crappy pixelated Nokia videos in the past. Because new Russian MOD finally started pumping out nice content. And it took 3 weeks for this to become public. And just imagine the amount of bureaucracy involved in releasing anything from the Russian side. As they say, русские долго запрягают, но быстро едут. The Russians are slow to get started, but once they get going, there is no stopping them. Russian bureaucratic machine is phenomenally slow. There is always a disconnect between its actions and its own media narratives. And that might be the best answer why it took 8 years to plan the invasion, because they just can't get anything done in a swift fashion. Well, no wonder we are getting cut off from SWIFT. This is the most obvious characteristic of Russian state. It's clumsy and legalistic and does not care about looking good in the right moment. But in the long run, this monstrous Leviathan always gets what it wants. The character of Ukrainian statehood that we're going to discuss in this episode, they, on the other hand, really have become very different from Russia in this aspect. There is a huge emphasis on the public image with almost nothing to back it up. It's like an RPG character who spent all the points on charisma and dexterity, neglecting strength, intelligence and endurance. Ukrainian officials really are different. They're twitching romantics on speed, not romantics maybe, twitching enthusiasts on speed running the show. Every single event is blown out of the proportions, couch warriors abusing Adobe Premiere, making various fakes, calling up Russian schools with fake bomb threats, sending gore photos of supposedly Russian dead soldiers to grannies on WhatsApp. This erratic behavior might get immediate short-term reaction, and it did in the first week of the war. But in the end, it will only justify destruction of this piratic state. So, before we begin various scenarios that might happen after the war is over, let's do a short recap of what happened militarily during the last week.
Right, so the most interesting fronts right now are Mariupol and Donbass, since that's where most of the action is happening. Very short overview of the other fronts. Kyiv is pretty quiet. The blockade slowly advances. I think today they finally completely cut off the Kyiv-Kharkiv highway. So the encirclement of Kyiv is coming closer at a rather slow pace. Then you have the southern front, where strange things are happening. I don't know. There was a huge talk about a Ukrainian counteroffensive from Nikolaev to Kherson, but nothing really much happened. There was video of some Ukrainian tanks leaving Nikolaev and being blown up on the road. Then the Ukrainians attacked the Russian airbase near Kherson with Graz and destroyed a couple of helicopters on the ground. And then Russian forward position, Russian vanguard troops left the forward line at Passat Pokrovskoye and pulled back. And I haven't seen on the footage of Passat Pokrovskoye, there were no signs of battle really. So it doesn't look like there was much contact, and I guess it was in preparation for this famed counteroffensive, but I haven't heard anything since that. So it may have been one of those, newspaper counteroffensives just to just to be able to say that there was one, but I haven't seen any results of it. It would have been a very stupid idea anyway, because they would, if they advanced this way from Nikolaev to Kherson, they are just putting themselves, just setting themselves up to be cut off and encircled. And also, Russia has like near 100% air domination in that region, and a ton of artillery, Kherson artillery, has been firing in the direction of Nikolaev. A barrack was destroyed today in Nikolaev, with about, hard to estimate how many casualties, around 30 dead and several dozen wounded, from what I heard. So yeah, it's, this counterattack would be a really suicidal idea. I don't know. And Kharkov still continues, everything the same. The Russians aren't storming the cities because it's just a huge waste of time and manpower. It's way easier to besiege them, and especially since the concept of fortress cities is the main Ukrainian strategy, which is basically what the Soviet Union had also planned for how to defend Ukraine against NATO. Like building this network of fortress cities to tie up advancing NATO troops so the Soviet army could regroup and pull up reserves and stuff. And the Ukrainians are trying to do the same thing. This is why the Russian army is just bypassing most of the cities, except Mariupol, which is important for several reasons. The first one is that it's part of the Donetsk People's Republic, officially. The second part is that it's very important to take Mariupol to secure a land corridor to Crimea from Russia. The corridor already exists since Mariupol is encircled, but there is, of course, it's still important to secure the city, to secure this road. And also they have an important port, a lot of industry in the city, although not much of that is going to be left. Mariupol, the defenders of Mariupol are in agony. The presidential advisor of Zelensky, Mr. Aristovich, has issued a kind of Stalingrad-like proclamation that there would be no help coming, but the defenders will be successful in fending off the Russians. The Russian army is being quite smart about how to storm Mariupol. They are not storming it like Grozny in 94. They are using small detachments that are methodically cutting apart the defenses to isolate them. So basically turning one encirclement into four encirclements. There is also supposedly an order for the Ukrainians to pull all available forces back to the Azovstal steel mill, which, if they do this, is a very stupid idea because currently the Russian aerospace forces are bombing the shit out of Azovstal. And there will just be not much left of the steel mill if they seriously put all their defense there. So yeah, otherwise it's just usual urban fighting, clearing buildings and stuff like this. There's been a lot of footage from that. It's mostly, from what I see, Russian special forces, Russian Marines, Chechens, and Donetsk detachments who are engaged in this fighting inside Mariupol. So yeah, the city is probably going to fall within the next days. Optimistic estimate is until the end of this week.
There were a lot of talks about Ukrainian mobilization, that they are supposedly reinforced at a rapid speed.
Yeah, they have announced a new round of mobilization where they want to mobilize 100,000 people. I don't know. It will be very hard to do this in the current situation. Aside from that, yes, also the defenders of Mariupol are being very desperate on social media. The official Twitter account of Azov Regiment, it's very funny that they have a Twitter account. They are calling on people to like protest in the world, everywhere in the world, to save them. They are tagging Elon Musk on Twitter and it's very desperate, and they know that they are fucked. And yeah, There are checkpoints outside the city to filter out the Azov guys through tattoos and stuff like that, because the Russians and especially the Donetsk guys are very, very interested in having a heart-to-heart with Azov. So yeah, it's not gonna be pretty.
Wonder how many of them will surrender.
That's a very good question. I can't imagine many of them surrendering. I can't imagine. I mean, it depends on who they try to surrender to, right?
Yeah.
If they surrender to regular to the Russian armed forces, sure, they will be taken in. But if they surrender to the Donetsk People's Militia, I can't imagine that going very well, since these people have a very, very long grudge against Azov.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's Mariupol. And then you have Donbas, especially the northern part of Donbas. Ukrainian troops have pulled out of Rubezhne and are now being besieged by Russian troops in Severodonetsk. Severodonetsk is also the eastern part of the city, I think, is currently being attacked by the Lugansk People's Militia, and they have penetrated into the city for 2 kilometers. So this means that basically the Severodonetsk and Lysychansk positions are the only presence left of the Ukrainian army inside the borders of the Lugansk People's Republic. And if Severodonetsk and Lysychansk fall, then the whole Lugansk Oblast will be free of any Ukrainian troops. And then what happened today, aside from that, was mostly just a couple of missile attacks. They destroyed a hangar in Lvov, where Ukrainian jets were being repaired. They destroyed the barracks in Nikolaev, as I already said. They destroyed something in Voznesensk. So the usual. Right, I think that's mostly all the important news from the front for right now. I think what we can expect in the coming days is also Izium has been taken finally. Izium is important because it is the direct road to Slavyansk and the way to connect the Kharkiv and the Donbas group. And if these groups link up, that means that the it means that the big cauldron everyone is talking about is being completed. And then the whole Ukrainian Donbas group is in very grave danger. So we can expect attacks on the places south of Izium, probably not on Slavyansk. It's too heavily fortified. It makes no sense to attack it like this. Probably on New York.
Is this the local village?
Yes, yes, New York is a local village. It was actually founded as New York back in the 18th century. Then it was renamed under the Soviets.
By the colonists? By whom? There were a lot of colonists in this region.
Yes, yes, yes.
Greeks,
yes,
Germans.
Donetsk itself was founded by an Englishman. Donetsk used to be called Yuzovka after Mr. Yuz. So yeah, there were a lot of English, British colonists in this area, and that's why there is a New York in Donbas. It was renamed under the Soviets in, I don't remember, I don't remember. But it was just 2 years ago, I think, it was renamed again by the Ukrainians into New York. And anyway, Russian media will have a field day when New York is taken. Everyone is already anticipating it. Very popular Russian military blogger Kolonel Kassat has already proposed that New York should be taken by a BMP, which has "Let's go Brandon" written on it. So yeah, everyone is already joking about it. That's gonna be funny. Right. So yes, that's most of the military news for now, I think. Of course, by the time you hear this, this episode will already be slightly outdated. So check out Twitter for the newest developments.
Yeah, I wonder how many civilians stayed are still in Mariupol. I believe less than 100,000 probably. But there is a lot of a huge problem with gas, because a lot of people just can't drive from Mariupol. They can't flee because they don't have any gas.
Yes, I think I don't know the precise number for right now. Yesterday evening, it was 40,000 who were evacuated. The problem was, of course, also that Azov didn't let them evacuate. So they are only being evacuated now when the Russian troops enter the city.
Right.
So, yeah, there are probably still a lot of civilians in Mariupol, but I think the more territory in the city Russian troops control, the more civilians will leave.
Apparently, New York was founded by Mennonites in
Okay.
All right, so have you, speaking of Mennonites, have you seen Schwarzenegger's video message to the Russian public and soldiers?
I have not watched it yet. I have not watched
Well,
it yet.
it's pretty funny, although predictable. I think Arnie thinks he's a, and rightly so, but he was a huge star in Russia, right? In the 90s, especially. And he thinks that he will be the voice of reason, that the Russians will really respect. So he made a video message and started off praising Yuri Vlasov, heavyweight Soviet weightlifter, who was a role model for Arnie growing up. He talked about arguing with his Nazi father, and his father is a literal Nazi soldier who was wounded in Stalingrad. So his dad hated Russians, and he argued with his son, who kept a poster of Vlasov over his bed. What's funny is that by saying that, he tried to appear a friend to the Russian people, right? But it's ironic because Vlasov himself was an Orthodox patriot and a Russian nationalist, basically. He wrote books about it. He was involved in the political sphere in the 90s, and his positions and ideology was clear. He was staunchly pro-Russian, and he would be 100% behind a military operation in Ukraine if he was alive.
Wait, погоди, ты про кого? Какой Влас в 90-х?
Heavyweight Soviet weightlifter Yuri Vlasov.
А этот, он книги писал?
Кирилл is such a fan of another Vlasov
Погоди.
that he that he mistook. Yeah, not that Vlasov. Schwarzenegger grew up as a fan of Vlasov, but he didn't care much to actually explore his ideology. Then Arnie compared Russian military operation in Ukraine to US Capitol riot in 2020. He said that it was two things that angered him the most in the last years. Also, he mocked an idea of denazification of Ukraine because Zelensky is part Jewish. That's the whole argument. And he mostly repeated tired babble about countless dead Russian soldiers, destroyed hospitals, as if this is the first war to happen in the entire history of the world. It's like a lot of Americans suffer from amnesia. Quote from this video: "This is not the war your grandpas fought to defend Russia. This is an illegal war." End quote. This is very important to fight only in legal wars. So I think Arnie is probably a good-natured man still, but he's not that intelligent and extremely gullible in his thinking. And he's just an old man who watched too much TV, right? And ranting about it.
Yeah, pretty
So
much.
yeah, Russians certainly lost some respect for him after that. And the arrogance of it all, like Ukrainians and Americans are always act from an arrogant position that Russians simply don't know what's happening, right? We must open their eyes of this silly.
Yeah, it's completely, it's really the most insane thing to me that people in the West genuinely believe that Russians don't know that there is a war going on. I mean, the fun thing is that Zelensky hasn't declared war either. Like, there is no war officially. There is no war. Russia hasn't declared war and Ukraine hasn't declared war. It is a funny question, actually, why Zelensky hasn't declared war. Because it would complicate the situation in a lot of ways. Because being in a state of war, there would be a lot more restrictions on what kind of weapons he could be delivered by foreign powers on trade. Of course, there would be no more gas going through Ukraine. No more Russian gas.
Europeans certainly don't like
And
that.
of course, it would also trigger the equivalent of Article 5 of NATO, but for the CSTO, so the scary Tajik, Kyrgyz, and Armenian armies would appear in Ukraine if Zelensky declared war.
President of Uzbekistan, I believe, said that Uzbekistan does not support Russian invasion and it stands for Ukraine. Have you heard that?
Yeah,
Uzbekistan is not
that,
part of CSTO, by the way. So they're really trying to be in the middle of it. And Kazakhstan also used a lot of this type of language. They don't wish to involve themselves in it.
The Kazakhs have said that they would support a peacekeeping operation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we should talk about this in the next segment about the future, a possible futures of Ukraine, because it's my grand theory of what is going to happen.
All right. So what is your main theory on the future of Ukraine then?
Okay. So my theory of what is going to happen to Ukraine is that CSTO will play a major role in this, the organization. Since we have already seen in the beginning of this year in events in Kazakhstan that CSTO is becoming more of a serious organization and not just a theoretical organization.
Yeah.
And I think the goal of one of the possible goals of the Russian military operation is to, regime change in Ukraine. And then with the new Russia-friendly government to put Ukraine into CSTO as fast as possible, because then the presence of Russian troops could be re-qualified from, the special military operation or occupation. It would be a permanent peacekeeping mission asked for by the Ukrainian government.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the way things will probably go. Or might go, I don't know. I don't want to assign probabilities again. I've already failed miserably at that. But I think the CSTO route is one of the most promising ways Russia could establish permanent geopolitical control over Ukraine, even without annexing any territory aside from Donbas.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but it will be a different Ukraine without millions of people, it destroyed buildings, industries, just like Mariupol might become a ghost town, right?
Yeah, that is true. Even if by some miracle Russia would pull out of Ukraine, even if America succeeded at keeping Ukraine in its sphere of influence, whoever wins the prize of Ukraine, be it America or Russia, will end up pumping hundreds of billions of dollars into the country to rebuild it. And I think that this is also one of the main reasons why America is more interested in just pumping Ukraine full of weapons and prolonging the war than anything else, because it will destroy Ukraine economically, and that will be bad for Russia's economy in the future. And basically, I think that's the main American goal right now, to turn Ukraine into a black hole for Russia, where money just gets put in and in and in.
Yeah, and it's kind of impossible also. How did USSR rebuild itself after the Great Patriotic War? Because we had a pretty high fertility rate back then, 2.5 or 3 kids per woman. Now in Ukraine, it's like 1.2 kids per woman. Also, Grozny. Why Grozny is such a jewel of Caucasus now? It's because they have a high fertility rate, right? It's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And Ukraine will be a large map of Stalker game, basically. And it will never change.
I mean, maybe there will be a post-war baby boom. This often happens after victorious wars.
Well, will Ukrainian refugees even want to return to their bombed cities? That's a question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
They will probably don't want that. They probably want to stay in a relatively normal country. Poland and Russia will suffice. CSTO is good and all, but what about partition of Ukraine? Is this possible that eastern part will join CSTO and western part will be independent? from Kiev westwards?
I think it is possible, but it would not make much sense to divide Ukraine along the Dnieper.
Because of Odessa and
Pridnestrovia? Yes, because of Odessa. Mm-hmm. Because of Odessa and Pridnestrovia, and if they are already, they already have a land corridor between Russia and Crimea. So this one will probably stay in some form or another. And I think it would be very important to also control Odessa as the main Black Sea port. And of course, to link up with Transnistria, which has also been now put under pressure again by the Moldavians. I could imagine a partition somewhere along the Zhytomyr-Vinnytsia line, 300, 400 kilometers west of Kiev. That would be possible. Of course, from a geostrategic point of view, it would be absolutely necessary to go, well, to the Carpathian Mountains, because the Carpathian Mountains are an important strategic line of defense, like just from a geographic point of view, not talking about politics or culture or anything. So, yeah, partition is also very possible. It's also interesting how this partition would happen. And especially how, or in general, if partition happens, or if part of Ukraine is absorbed by Russia, how it will be organized. That's a very interesting question, because traditionally, for the last several hundred years, the capital of Russian Ukraine was Kharkiv. But Kharkiv has been Ukrainized for 8 years, and especially in the first years, in a very violent fashion. As we've already talked about on some other episode, Kharkiv had a very strong pro-Russian movement in 2014. There were like 100,000 people marching in the anti-Maidan protests. They proclaimed their own Kharkiv People's Republic. And then the Ukrainian army came in and they started disappearing people. They started just killing people in the streets. Like there were deadly firefights in Kharkiv even before Strelkov arrived in Donbass. So Kharkiv was the hotspot for the Russian movement in Ukraine. And the city's administration has been completely purged. A lot of people from Western Ukraine are now ruling Kharkiv, so to speak. Tens of thousands have fled. Hundreds disappeared or were killed. And I don't know how Kharkiv would fare as the Russian capital of Ukraine now. So it's possible that the new either Novorossiya or complete Eastern Ukraine or whatever, it would need another like capital. Dnipropetrovsk is a bad candidate because it's one of the most heavily Ukrainized cities in Eastern Ukraine. That leaves pretty much only
Donetsk
or Odessa. And that also leads to another question that has been discussed lately. I don't know if you have seen it, but like people on TV or on Telegram channels, they have been suddenly talking about the Donetsk Krivorozhsk Sovetsk Respublika.
No, I have not heard about it.
The Donetsk Krivorozhsk Soviet Republic, which was an independent Soviet republic that was forcibly integrated into Ukraine by Lenin later. Basically, the Russian movement in Donbass has always been kind of this, since 91, this kind of pro-Soviet nostalgic movement, mostly. And the local organizations that were doing pro-Russian stuff since 91, they were also mostly of this sort. And when in 2014, the idea of Novorossiya was proclaimed, the old imperial Novorossiya, people there didn't like it because the leadership, at least, mm-hmm. the political leadership of independent Donbass, they didn't like this. They didn't like the idea of a Novorossiya Federation. They don't like this whole the pre-revolution aesthetic stuff
Well, some liked
because
it,
they are
like
Soviet.
Mozgovoy, and used
Yeah,
it.
Mozgovoy is not the political. He
Oh,
wasn't the
yeah.
political leadership. I'm talking strictly about the
Like
political leadership.
Plotnitsky,
Of
basically.
course, in the military, people are have different opinions on this. So they have this sort of idea of this Soviet patriot Donbas or the Donetsk-Kirovohrad Republic and stuff like this. While in Odessa, for example, the Novorossiya idea is a lot more popular. And people in Odessa will not accept the like this Soviet patriot Donbas stuff. So the question of Eastern Ukraine was also one if it will be Novorossian or Donbassian. This is a very important point, and I'm not sure how it will be or how it can be resolved.
Well, Donbassian is more realistic, I guess.
This is true,
I'm
yes.
thinking that the future of physical Ukraine and actual Ukraine is not as important as a future of virtual Ukraine, because virtual Ukraine existed for like 17 years. Canadian refugees, Ukrainian refugees to Canada, maintained the virtual Ukraine. This new wave of refugees, a lot of them are Ukrainianized, and a lot of them are very spiteful that Mr. Putin has destroyed their cities. These millions of Ukrainians will also join this virtual Ukraine movement, and how will it affect the life for Russians in the West? Has turned Russian language searches are just Ukrainian ones. There's no, it's not a single Russian media on Google. It's all Ukraine. So Ukraine will be like the preferred pronouns for Russian-speaking people from now on.
Ukraine will be, I think, the future if there is some sort of partition and there will be a Western Ukrainian Rum state, then this Western Ukrainian Rum state will just be the new Reddit nation, the new Taiwan.
Yeah, it will be the first thing to come up when talking about Russia, like Redditors do China. But yeah, if there is a partition on Vinnytsia Zhytomyr line, right, then this western part of former Ukraine will join NATO, right? There is no reason not to for them.
Probably, yeah. But I think it's in the interest of both sides to have a buffer
Oh,
state.
yeah.
Because the Americans will at some point realize that Western aligned Ukraine is not going to happen. It's just not. They can do whatever they want. It's not going to happen. Never, ever. I mean, maybe after a nuclear war. That's possible, of course. I'm not going to discount that possibility. But in the current configuration, it's never, ever going to happen. And they will have to accept this. When they finally face this reality, they will probably understand that having like Western Ukraine as a rump state or like Polish semi-protectorate is preferable to direct to having American rockets in Lvov.
Yeah, in other news, ruble was strengthening itself for a week now, so it's not that bad. It's around 100 for $1, which is pretty convenient and only natural. What else? What else has been happening? Well, no, nothing really in Russia. For people who expected some serious economic collapse and starving, I saw some guys fantasizing about Russians eating grass because of the sanctions, something like that.
How people think that Russia is going to starve. Russia is probably the most food secure country in the entire world.
Yeah, I saw some Americans pitying Russians that we no longer have FedEx and DHL, and we never had them. So yeah, a lot of false pity, arrogance, and informational warfare and fog of war are going on still. But in actual Russian life, nothing really changed other than there's no sugar anymore in the stores because mad
Yeah, but
grandmas.
that's just because everyone buys
Well,
it,
yeah.
because everyone has been conditioned by the first COVID panic, that if anything ever happens, you have to buy all the sugar and all the toilet paper and stuff like this. It's insane. The governor of Krasnodar has said that they have enough sugar in stores to last 2 years. If there were no sugar right now, Krasnodar always would have enough sugar for 2 years. And still, everyone buys it in the supermarkets. It's just the panic reaction that people have been conditioned to. It's really stupid.
Oh, yeah. I wonder when we will stop talking about Ukraine. Should we do it before the war ends and start conditioning our listeners and brainwashing them about like Galkowski and stuff?
I've recently seen that our favorite Russia-born commentator talked about Golkovsky as a
He created the language of hatred, apparently. Yeah, incredible stuff. Maybe we also should apply in Starovoitova Fellowship, whatever that means. All right, I think this is it for this sit-rep. I hope you've been well informed by us and you still have some interest in following this old news. The 3 weeks conflict, what the fuck, Putin, what are you doing? It's getting stale. Do something fun, like dancing Chechens. Well, the Chechen clip in Mariupol really was interesting for followers who waited for some Chechen shenanigans for a long time.
Yeah, I think it's the first actual combat footage of Chechens.
And it looks kind of, I don't know how to put it, chaotic shooting at apartment buildings, but
I mean, it's urban fighting. Urban fighting is always very chaotic.
oh yeah.
It's very hard to, like, I think what they were doing in that video is just providing suppressive fire on the windows while the other part of the group was storming the building from inside. That seems most logical to me.
Denazification, decommunization. There's a lot of labels slapped onto this conflict, but the actual, absolutely inevitable outcome will be deindustrialization of Ukraine. And it's already happening right now. Tractor factories, tank factories, steel factories, they're all getting destroyed. Well, the thing is, before the Soviets, outside of Donbas, most of Ukraine was never really industrialized, so it's getting to its default settings. Russians also are going through the very transformative years. For the first time in the history of modern Russia, there are perfect conditions to become self-sufficient and a self-respecting country. But we'll see about that. Thank you for listening and see you very soon.